When they repealed alcohol prohibition, it was left up to the states what to do with alcohol. And so you have most of the Republican presidential candidates saying the federal government should not interfere if states want to legalize. That's really an amazing development.
Jacob Sullum has been writing for Reason magazine since I was a senior in high school, which coincidentally is about the time that I picked up Reason magazine for the very first time and noticed there were all these wonderful writers who were advocating for the legalization of drugs. Today, Jacob Sullum is a senior editor at Reason. He's a nationally syndicated columnist. He's the author of the great book, Saying Yes in Defense of Drug Use, and he blogs about drug policy at Forbes.com. I'll just start off with the most basic question. Why is it important and good that pot be legal?
Well, it's a few reasons. It's first of all unjust to treat people like criminals for engaging in behavior that violates no one's rights. That's the most basic thing for me. So I would say the first point is that prohibition is unjust. Second point is that it's unscientific to the extent that people think that the drugs we ban are somehow worse than the drugs that we don't ban. That's clearly not true if you compare marijuana to alcohol. Marijuana is less dangerous by several important measures. So that distinction does not make sense. It's arbitrary, which makes the injustice of prohibition worse, I guess, because it's not even based on a distinction that makes sense. And then finally, it's unconstitutional. I mean, people may remember that back when they banned alcohol, they needed a constitutional amendment for that, because Congress didn't have the power to ban a commodity just because members of Congress didn't like it. That everybody assumed that you needed to have an amendment, but somehow when it came time to ban marijuana, they didn't need an amendment. The Constitution had not changed. Initially, it was disguised as a revenue measure. It was a prohibitive tax that was imposed on marijuana. But then later on, by the time of the Controlled Substances Act around 1970, this was rationalized under the Commerce Clause. This was a form of regulating interstate commerce. But the way that's been interpreted by the Supreme Court is that even if you're growing pot in your own closet or your own backyard, and it never leaves your property, let alone the state, that still somehow is interstate commerce. And there was a case not so long ago involving medical marijuana in California where they said, even if you are a patient and you're growing marijuana to treat your symptoms, and that's allowed by state law, and even if you grow your own marijuana, even if you get it somewhere else and you possess it, you have a little bag of it in your dresser, somehow that can be reached by the Interstate Commerce Clause, which really makes no sense. So the powers of the federal government have been vastly expanded by stretching the Commerce Clause to cover basically anything Congress wants to do. And marijuana prohibition is one of many examples of that.
Well, given that picture, it's amazing how much has really changed, right? Because now medical marijuana is legal in about 24 states. And I know the elections of 2016 are about a year away, and so it's looking a bit forward. But do you have a sense of like how the battles are going to shape out? Because pot is going to be on the ballot in about, what, half a dozen states?
Well, Ohio was this year, and that went down in flames.
Yeah.
Largely for two reasons. It was bad timing because it was an off-year election, and the people who are inclined to support marijuana legalization are more likely to vote in a presidential election year. They're more likely to be Democrats, more likely to be younger. Those people tend to favor legalization more. And secondly, it had a major flaw in it where it would have created a cannabis cultivation cartel. It would have limited commercial production to 10 sites that were controlled by the people who were the financial backers of the initiative. So a lot of people didn't like that, including a lot of people who otherwise support legalization. So that lost by nearly a 2-to-1 margin. It was a huge disaster. I think next year, California is the biggest one. There's a good shot it's gonna pass. It's kind of surprising that California has not legalized marijuana by now. It was the first state to legalize marijuana for medical use. But an initiative to legalize it for recreational use lost by, I think, 4 points several years ago. The polling looks pretty good. It's around 55%, according to one recent poll. So that's the most likely state to legalize, and that would be huge.
Do you remember a time, because you've been covering this for quite a while now, do you remember a time when this was like crazy talk, right? I mean, back in certainly the early 90s, late 80s, sort of the just say no era.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me very uneasy now because I'm uncomfortable being in the majority. And when I read, you know, like the New York Times says we should legalize marijuana, I think maybe I should reevaluate my position because that makes me nervous. But, you know, when I first started working at Reason, public support for legalization was probably less than a quarter of Americans supported it. Support peaked in the late 70s, around 28%. But then during the Reagan administration in the early 80s, I think it bottomed out at around 23%. And then it started going up again, kind of gradually, and then a little bit more sharply. And since then, it's been moving steadily upward and until we get to majority support for legalization.
And who were the allies and the opponents of drug legalization back then and versus today? And how has that changed?
It was primarily lefties with a smattering of libertarians, not surprisingly. So basically lefties and libertarians, progressive people who might call themselves progressives, a few conservatives. For example, William F. Buckley and other editors at National Review supported marijuana legalization before a lot of other conservatives did. But the conservative movement in general was very strongly anti-drug. And it's very striking if you look at the Republican presidential candidates, and there are a lot of them this year, that most of them actually support letting the states decide. They don't necessarily say we like legalization. In fact, they generally don't say that, and they may even say, I don't want to legalize marijuana, but they say it should be left up to the states. Well, that's basically what it meant to repeal alcohol prohibition. When they repealed alcohol prohibition, it was left up to the states what to do with alcohol. And so you have most of the Republican presidential candidates saying the federal government should not interfere if states want to legalize. That's really an amazing development. But I think people on the left have always been critics of the war on drugs, have always supported some form of decriminalization, if not legalization. And by and large, they still do. But what you're starting to see is that once marijuana actually becomes legal and you have an industry run by capitalists that are producing and selling the stuff, progressives start to get uneasy. So they want controls to keep the operation small, maybe even to make it nonprofit. I mean, some people say people shouldn't go to jail over this, but we don't want big corporations selling marijuana, encouraging people to consume it as much as possible and that sort of thing. That scares them. They don't like the idea of big business producing and selling marijuana. So you're going to start to see some cleavages there between libertarians and progressives on what should regulation look like after legalization.
I'd like to talk about one of my all-time favorite Jacob Sullum moments, your appearance on The O'Reilly Factor. Most famously, he had you on to talk about Saying Yes, your book. When he had you on, he got into a kind of a heated discussion with you, and he called you a dangerous pinhead.
Why would you, an intelligent guy, want to put forth a theory that intoxicating oneself is beneficial? Why would you want to do that with the enormous social problems that we have in this country?
The biggest component of what you're talking about involves legal drugs. My point
is, it doesn't matter whether it's legal or illegal. Pinheads like you are encouraging intoxication when it's one of the worst things in our society.
Have we crossed that point now where people believe that, or is there still a large percent of the population that thinks the way that O'Reilly does?
There are still a lot of people who just see marijuana as a symbol of evil, and they just can't get over it. And a lot of them are conservatives who think that with marijuana comes ideological and cultural baggage that alienates them, and they can't get beyond that. You know, they can't see it as simply a plant that has certain properties that can be used for certain things, that has certain risks and benefits. They will never be able to see it rationally because of this emotional connotation that it has for them.
Jacob Sullum, thank you so much for talking with us. I appreciate it.
Sure, thank you.
I'm Todd Cranin for Reason TV.